Yeah, you said you want to be number Sipanyamohale. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name well.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Sipanyamohale. Feel free, you must relax. There's a bottle of water there. If you feel that you want to drink some water, you can just drink some water there. I hope you slept well here in Cape Town, eh?
No, I just came.
Oh, okay. I thought you slept here in Cape Town.
No.
You, at least you were not stuck in traffic.
No.
Okay. My first question is about you telling us about yourself. Who are you? And why do you think... Before even... Introduction, Garland, have you said?
Okay.
Yeah, my honorable members are going to introduce themselves. I was just hitting the road running. Eh? Sorry. My name is Nhlanhla Ncube Ndaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. I have my two staff members. This one is the secretary of the committee, and this side of my right-hand side is Tembega, who's the timekeeper. And you have 45 minutes. But you have 25 minutes to respond to the question. The other 20 minutes is for us as honorable members. Okay. Honorable members, you can introduce yourself, Mom Story.
Good afternoon, Ms. Mohale. My name is Dora Mugutwa. I'm a member of this group.
Afternoon, Mayor. My name is Thabo Manyoni. I'm the member of the committee.
Dumela. Ke boitumelo Joyce Maluleke mo leloko wa committee ena. Khotso me. Ligama lami nokholeji Majeke. Member of this committee.
Dumela ngwanaka. Igama lami ngumakoti from the county. Niyazalela comment.
Yeah, othandi dumela wasi.
Good day. My name is Pinky Kikana, member of the committee.
Hello, ma'am. Terry Stander, member of the committee. Mela me libisela ka kina msa kile loko la committee na.
Good afternoon. I'm Womania Druchen, I'm a member of the committee, and my sign language interpreter Trudy Kien is voicing for me. Good day.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome. I'm Sherilyn Dudley. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We have our legal person, Herman, there at the back, and our media person, Yoliswa, there, and the lady next to Honorable Dudley, Sanal, is from our Human Resource Department. Tell us about yourself, and why do you think you are the best candidate for this post?
My name is Ntabi Seng, as you all know. In terms of my professional training, I'm sure you're aware I'm a social worker, a health psychologist, and a whole lot of other things, and a practicing advocate. However, I've always described myself as a human rights activist and a woman's activist. I come from the student movement, women's movement, and all of those, but I also come from a family of activists. In terms of being aware of what happens around your community and that you have a role in your community. So I am somebody who's particularly aware of their surroundings and the discrepancies within those surroundings, and also regard myself as somebody with strengths and skills and expertise to that I can contribute to make our surroundings better for everybody.
Okay, let's go low.
Madam Chair, may I come up to address you quickly?
Okay. Sorry, for that. You may continue.
Yes, I was just saying, in a nutshell, I regard myself as belonging to a community.
It's not, sorry, it was not about you. It was about our list. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. Now, based on that, I actually feel I've got both training, expertise, qualifications, and strengths to can contribute to the CGE. I think I'm in a particularly advantageous position in the sense that I'm one of those activists who were part of conceptualizing several of the structures post-1994, the CGE, TRC, and others included, to a point where I participated actively in the mobilization and lobbying of acts like your Customary Marriages Act, Domestic Violence Act, the TRC Act. We were quite actively involved in that. I participated in a whole lot of commissions and review committees of different laws at that time to usher in the new democracy. So I'm not only do I know, I regard myself as somebody who's been at it all this time.
Honorable Maluleka, Honorable Kaula, Mam Story, Honorable Kekane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ma'am Mohali, can you kindly tell us what do you understand by CGE? And if you are appointed as a commissioner of this body, what is it that you will do to ensure that this body is visible, especially in rural areas?
CGE is one of six Chapter 9 institutions. It's according to Section 187 of the Constitution. It was conceptualized to actually say we've got the Bill of Rights, we've got other legislation, we've got the Constitution. However, we need those specialized entities so that certain things are given priority at attention because of where we're coming from in terms of backlogs, etc. That is why, you know, there's the Human Rights Commission, the CGE, finances. It was important that the AG be set up in that way so that people now know why, where our money is going to, how much it is, how it is handled, etc. So CGE, in terms of the scheme of things, it's up there with very, very critical entities that the government said they need to be there so that the backlog and the establishing of a new society is done in a particular way. The bias towards women was unapologetic, and CGE is an evidence thereof.
One of the successes of the CGE and other NGOs was actually the Customary Marriages Act in terms of lobbying for it and getting it to be set up. In fact, if I remember well, I don't know of late, maybe it's different, but the Customary Marriages Act is only one of few, if not two at some point, of acts that were retrospective. So that women can actually go and register their marriages, women can do all sorts of other things to better their lives and bring them up to par with other women. And it's a cornerstone because it was geared towards bringing out of poverty and bringing on board even those rural women. And I see myself as, if I were to, as a member of the commission, going back to those kinds of instruments and using them to say, if you want an impact, this is an instrument. You must remember, Customary Marriages Act allows women to register their marriages. Once that marriage is registered, it guarantees property, or rather a home, for the woman who's married, because now they will be having something to show that this is my husband. It guarantees them all the monies and payouts should the husband die somewhere at work. It guarantees education for their children. So it's very, very critical. I would start there by saying, let's use this act to empower women. But because of the tensions, the gender tensions that are there in our society, you don't want to go in and do that alone, because it's going to be like, oh, now you're saying women must drag us to Home Affairs to go and register us. You partner with organizations like Bosonke's Gender Justice, where they would be the ones, each one teach one. Go out there, look for other men who are married customarily, for an example, and make sure that they go with their wives to register. This is not about them. It's about their families beyond their lives. So it's those kinds of things that you could do there. You've got your Tusong centers, where Tusong centers are in very remote areas, but they're known to be SASSA and Home Affairs centers. CGE could actually be there, where a lot of education and advice and issuing of information and all of that happens at Tusong centers, because Tusong centers are quite remote in some of the areas, so you could use that. You can use, for example, Department of Health, where it becomes standard when people go to say, I'm pregnant, I need to register so that you monitor my birth, to actually say, are you married? What kind of regime are you married in? Do you know that you could register your regime? You know, that kind of thing. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I see in your CV you proud yourself for saying that you've set up Tutuzela Center.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, there's been like a lot of talk about for them not being efficient.
Yes.
And also not being well-funded.
Yes.
Can you just maybe just briefly unpack us on the issues regarding the Tutuzela, what the challenges that are actually there?
Tutuzela centers, as a point of departure, I would say they are a good concept. They were conceptualized, you may even know more than me, at that time of Dula Omar, who was saying, let's prioritize women. I think, again, it was from that vision of the current government saying women must be a priority. And it was supposed to be a one-stop center for women. When they report, they get examined, they are even gotten ready for trial at the Tutuzela centers, where there would be a psychologist and those kinds of things. However, Tutuzela centers, I think they got caught in the priorities within the Department of Justice, if I could put it that way. The first challenge was where the Department of Health was saying, but what has this got to do with us? Because the gripe was Tutuzela centers should not be at police stations. If you're going to examine at hospitals. And there was that tension where a lot of doctors were refusing to cooperate and say, why are we getting involved in this? So it was the placing, physical placing of thereof that was a problem. The second problem became at the point where the doctors would be reluctant to go and
testify and say, I'm not going to testify, because there were supposed to be specialized doctors put there. So that was a second problem. Taking it out of there, then there was a falling into the cracks in terms of budget, because Department of Health said, it's not our concept, we're giving accommodation. Department of Justice was running low on what you call it. But you find that sometimes even the leadership within justice would come and say, but why are we funding structures that are in hospitals? And then the NPA would also say, we are going to give our prosecutors, but our prosecutors are not going to sit in some hospital and prepare victims. So you had this concept of this well-oiled machinery, and all the participants in that machinery are reluctant. So it has gone from when Dula Omar and the late Minister Manto were a team, they set them up, and then the next person comes in and says, I don't understand, let's wait. And then the other one says, oh, I understand now, let's rev them up, just like that, just like that. That is, now you have only 54 or so. And 2003, 2004, we were opening to Tuzela number 37. So in a 10-year period, you only have 20 other. So it's that stop and start, stop and start.
Thank you,
sir.
You must also mind the time.
Oh, okay. Who can show me the time? Will you tell me?
Thank you, Chair. Mentally saying, there are competing demands for resources across various departments. You have just shown how certain departments, even if there was innovation and creativity around Tuzela, but because of constraints, you know, departments could not come together on certain things. And I want to say now, financially, there are competing demands between government departments and Chapter 9 institutions, CGE being one of them. And ordinarily, they would say we are underfunded, and that's why we are unable to be intuition centers and all the things that you were proposing. Now, how do you see yourself making CGE to have an impact on its programs, given the meager resources they have?
I think the strength of a program like CGE is that it's a community, it's a societal program, so it's very easy to piggyback on a lot of programs. When you look at a department like the Department of Social Development, they do not have 100,000 or 500,000 social workers everywhere. However, they get into partnerships with existing social development, but their strength is some of them, they do fund them, but they get into those kinds of partnerships. So CGE may need to get into partnerships with different departments to say, let's work on this together, let's share a KPA. Department of Labor, if they need to know how many women they're bringing on board in terms of this or the other thing, because they are part of monitoring, they don't have to monitor this themselves, but they can get into a bilateral agreement with the Department of Health to say, please feed us those, without coming in as we are monitoring you. But let's be in partnership so that we monitor together, because anyway, it is your duty, and that would be done. And you must remember, Department of Labor does it with themselves and everybody else. They could go to a private sector. It's happening actually in the mornings when you see there's Ashupol and clientele and everybody advertising. And I keep wondering, why don't we go to these companies and say, for your CIS, please, for every 10 flights, let's have a CGE. For every 10 flights, let's have this and this commission, where we have an advert that they pay for, that they fly for every 10 flights. So it could be those what you call it, where you do free marketing, and it goes the long way, it achieves that. But CGE also needs to heighten just a little bit its successes. It has had successes, and it is not talking about those successes, not in a, you know, like your Hollywood thing, but to actually say, this is what we have done. We are touching people's lives, and you know, yeah.
Oh,
wena ke ngoba siyakuthemba la kusukhona la uzimisela ukuthi nawe uyazokwazi ukufisa ngabe uzokwazi ukuhlungisela lomthetho ukuthi inkosi mayiganwa special this time ngoba kuqala amakhosi ayingakabiki imali government awaholela yona ukuthi ayizilobolele yona ngemali yayo ukunqanda lokho akuhlukumezeka komuntu wesifazane othi mangabe semhlambe babanga ukuthi ufuna ukuganwa afuna ukuganwa ngenkani egcineni bese emgxosha unkosikazi bese hambe eba umumba hambe ema entabeni njengoba ngisho ukuthi ekugcineni ugcina lo muntu wesifazane sehlenyuka nezingane inkosi sifa komunye ngoba lezinduna zonke nabantu besigodi bathi no vele lo akuyena owathi akasahloniphi inkosi abafuna ngisho ukwazi ukuthi bayamngena sicela ke lo mthetho ukuthi wena uyakuthembisa yini ukuthi uma ungena yonke le mthetho ethinta abantu besifazane ebuhlungu kanje uzokwazi yini ukuyimela nakusilekelela nakuyona ngiyabonga
thanks ma In fact, section 4 of the customer...
Good morning, ma'am. Yes. There is a provision in our law that if there has been...
Wait a
second. Okay. There's a provision in our law that if the husband intends to take a second wife, he must first get the approval of the first wife. However, in reality, we don't see that happening. It's more like the husband or Amakosi would have an entitlement to unilaterally take a decision. Over and above that, the issue would be discussed publicly. And the wife of Inkosi, apparently, it is said that belongs to the community. So the question that I would like to ask from you is, how are you going to assist these vulnerable women in dealing with the issue of Amakosi, who are sometimes doing really nearly, or if the husband, if you like. Thank you.
Thanks. In fact, as you were saying, it's not only Amakosi, even the husbands do that. But that is simple. Section 4 of the Customary Marriages Act actually outlines how a second marriage should happen. And one of the strengths, that is why I've got a passion with registering a customary marriage, is that once we get women into the rhythm of registering, then it lights a bulb to say we need to go and register this marriage. Kube ne paper nyana iltis. Then out of that paper, then the second wife will actually want that paper. And if the strength lies with CGE intervening at home affairs level, where they can actually be educating home affairs staff, number one, but number two, making it a part of the practice to say to people when they register, where is the first wife? Section 4 says they must bring something that is written. Have they brought it? Where is it? Can you go and get them? Because they've got to give consent. So it can deal with it. But where it is not, where they don't go to Home Affairs, it still creates that problem of women actually now being left out. Again, it depends on the education. Like for organizations like CGE, where they could go out there and say, once you are taken, you must know now the law recognizes that you are married. Don't take your children and just go away. Do like a woman who has to be divorced. Go and say, what are my rights? Because now you do have rights. And as I was saying, the strength of the Customary Marriages Act is that marriages can be registered retrospectively. So my gogo can come and say, we got married 1942 with this man. I'm from such and such a place. Can we come? And they'll do it now. In 2017, the law allows that marriage to be registered as a customary marriage.
Yeah, I think ushintshi lombuzo kaKhawula interpreter kaKhawula. UKhawula bekangasho lento ichazile. UKhawula ubebuza ukuthi uma inkosi ithatha unkosikazi ilotshelelwa umphakathi waleyo ndawo la inkosi khona. Bese lo unkosikazi makasathathiwe ukuba nenkinga yokuthi makanenkinga nomkhwenyana wakhe noma ngabe ekamelweni noma ngabe kunye anako ekhaya kufuneka baye emphakathini kuyokhulunywa leyo nkinga leyo umama umkhale unthabiseng angakhona yini njengoba apply ukuba ucommissioner ukuthi asisize ukuthi labo mama inkosi kokuqala mayizilobolele kuintroduce umthetho othi inkosi mayizilobolele bese kwesibili abomama babe namalungelo wabo ukuthi bavikeleke ukuthi inkinga zasemizini yabo zingayokhulunywa emphakathini. I think mama Khawula umbuzo wakhe bowusho kanjalo.
Okay.
I'll give an extra time for that.
Okay.
Because we interpreter yakhe silahlekisile.
Ayisho ngesilungu.
Hemen, can you please interpret that for me?
This is important.
Thanks, Chair.
So basically, Mam Kaula was basically asking a question as to if, for example, it's a traditional area where, you know, our people are under amakhosi and women in that particular area have challenges of their own. Is it possible that inkosi of the area can lobola on his own, knowing that it's traditional rules that apply in that particular area? So basically, if a woman has problems at home, the issues must not be discussed publicly. I think that's basically the part of the thing.
I would say that two things there. African marriages, by their nature, marriages generally, actually, not even African marriages, you rarely get a situation where you pay your own lobola. It is a modern thing where men go out and work to earn money for their lobola. An African bride, or traditionally and normally, in it was your family that was married there. In other communities as well, you find families bringing money together for somebody to marry. So the issue is not about who brought the money. It has always been us, as communities, bringing two people together. The issue is how some of the institutions manipulate those kinds of practices. There are very few brides who will say, I got married and not even a single family member of mine contributed anything. Religiously otherwise, there's always a group. So it's people actually manipulating it for their own ends. So what we need to do is actually to say, there is nowhere in law that says, because you didn't pay lobola out of your pocket, therefore it is not marriage. What the laws say is there a delegation that was sent to go and ask for you? That delegation, was there a meeting of the minds by that delegation? Did you relocate and go there and regard yourself and act in such a way that you regard yourself as so-and-so's wife? Do you have children? Are those your children? If those are your children, it satisfies Section 2, 3, 4, and 5 of Customary Marriages Act. You are married.
If you can respond to the one of, if the wife has a problem and then the indunas,
yes.
The problem must be taken to the indunas.
Yes.
If you can respond to that one.
I'm a white. You are very difficult question.
Sorry, I'm saying. La ngithi mina. Abantu besifazane bahlukeka kanti laba basengikhuluma ngabo abagana inkosi. Because inkosi, amakhosi, alotshelelwa umphakathi. Inkosi ayikhokhi lutho. So manje, after that, mangabe sebenenkinga yasekamerweni ngabe yani. Kubizwa ayini amakhosi uzokhulunywa wonke ngabe amanyala ngabe intoni. Mina umbuzo wami uthi ke kuwena, awukho yini umthetho uma ngabe kwenzeka manje sithi siyaqasha la noma iyangena kulo msebenzi? Uyakuthembisa ukuthi yonke leyo mthetho yenkosi elotsholelayo izidengelo ney'moto after sekuhlukumeza inkosikazi ngoba engasifuni ekutheni konke lezi zinto, uzokwazi ukuthi uphule lo mthetho bo uyacindeza ekuhlukumeza umuntu wesifazane?
From the standpoint you are lobbying, Mama, responding to your... I was saying from the standpoint you are lobbying, I think that can be done. One of the projects that I undertook when I was at Power was a 1 million signature campaign, which I learned during our UDF days, where we got 1 million signatures for one thing or the other. But what we need to do is actually to start lobbying at the level, yeah, the women's organizations, NGOs, even Bokonsalesa, because there are a lot of progressive thinking people inside Kontralesa, but also to sometimes be strong enough to call bluff, because on the one hand the same Makosi say we don't want women here, we don't want children here, and yet it is the same Makosi who calls all and sundry to come and talk their private things. So there are a lot of things that we actually need to say, this is not cultural. It is abuse of culture. It is about looking for witnesses to an alibi to do something that is wrong, and we are not going to play into those hands. It is not culture. It is actually about manipulating the system and call it what it is. But it also needs galvanizing of the community throughout, a consistent campaign to say, these are the things that are happening.
You and Talisa, yeah, you have responded.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ma'am, in between 2009 and July 2012, you served as municipal manager at the Randfontein municipality. There, in terms of the advertisement for this position, paragraph 4, it says that the candidates must be people who are fit and proper persons. According to your disclosure in 3.2 of the questionnaire, where it says that you were under investigation,
yes,
by KPMG,
yes.
I've done subsequent research, and it says that you awarded a 65 million rand fleet management contract to Standard Bank without a council resolution and in contravention of the PFMA. Apparently, there was no council resolution to close the tender process to banks only, and apparently that there was Fleet Africa who had the previous tender at a staggering 25 million rand less. Okay, so it was 40 million rand versus 65 million rand. So, and also according to this article in the Mail and Guardian, it says that it was PwC who did the investigation, not KPMG as in your questionnaire. And then there was some allegations that after your suspension, which was a council resolution on the 29th of April 2011, and further that the PwC should investigate, it was then alleged that in a meeting on the 22nd of August, apparently there was political intervention by the ANC to ensure that the investigation was dropped as well as your suspension lifted.
Okay.
And that decision was taken on the 8th of September. So, ma'am, what I would like to ask is that you have an opportunity now to give full disclosure with regards to that, because there is very much, there's very serious allegations here that you said that verbally abusing, telling PwC to leave the premises, and eventually the PwC investigators had been barred from entering the. So here is your opportunity. Full disclosure, is there anything that you think, because I don't believe that your application is full and full disclosure, So is there anything that you believe you should share with this committee in full disclosure that prevents you from being a fit and proper person to be appointed to this position? And what are the facts relating to that case? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Please, I would like you to note carefully. Number one, I am a fit and proper person to be a commissioner. Number two, I'm glad that you raised that, but I'm also saddened by the fact that you would have relied on a newspaper article. It is completely wrong. Okay. It is completely wrong, so I'll take you through the rundown. When I got to Randfontein Local Municipality, I started on this Monday, the 3rd of August, 2009. Because the first, I think, was on a Friday or a Saturday. When I got there, the first and only thing that my corporate director wanted me to do was to sign this fleet thing. And at that time, the tender that had been awarded was awarded to 218 million for a municipality whose budget was 800 million. I want you to note those facts, please. Yeah, 218. And I was uncomfortable. I'd just come out of a situation where I knew nothing about the municipality. And the strength of sometimes going in is people keep saying to you, please be careful when you sign, please be careful when you sign. And I was particularly alarmed because in no time, I think it was by the 25th of August or so, I had been called to a meeting by councillors saying, my table has got piles and piles of things. What the hell is going on? Why am I not signing? So I was on high alert. When I looked at that tender, I made a decision that under no circumstances will I sign it. I will repeat that decision anytime. I said, I will not sign that tender, and as a result of me not signing that tender, I went through trauma. Suspended. I went to court. It is the municipality that withdrew the case. Please note that. It is the municipality that withdrew the case in court. That was another thing. But the other thing is, Fleet Africa was the tender that was before. It was not a current tender. It was the one that was finishing when this one was being advertised. And by the way, the same Fleet Africa, when we made calculations of how they were charging the municipality for leasing those cars for 5 years, each car was an average of 720,000 per car. That was on average a Monza. At the time, the mayor was driving King X5, which was going at a rate of 500 million. He ended up paying 3 point something million per car from the Fleet Africa, what you call it. That is when I was so lobbied by everybody that I got so confused. And I went to the law, looked at the law. It says you may or you can or you must, where there is trainer, hone in and do a closed tender. I took that decision. I will take it again anytime. I took that decision. I called only the banks. So that's how it happened. It's a pity that, you know, sometimes people rely on newspapers, but that is not true. And it was not PwC. First, it was, I don't know which company, and then it was PwC. And why I actually said to PwC, I'm not going to cooperate with you, was when somebody walked in and said, can we have this, that, and that? And I said, who are you? They said, we're from the PwC. Please check with the PwC. I wrote to the CEO of the PwC and said, your guys are here. I'm the accounting officer. I do not know what is going on. He pulled them out. That's when KPMG came. KPMG actually cleared me, and KPMG was paid 920,000 rand later. So
It is said that it is a rucksack on my back, yet it was me. It was taken to a prosecutor who called me and called everybody and said, leave this lady alone. She has actually saved the municipality money. And may I say, it was not about a group or what, it was individuals within the municipality. So let us not put a brush over this and say, oh, it must have been that group or that group. No. The same group that is alleged that the ANC group protected me, it was ANC councillors say, no, 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 we cannot be doing this. They were on the right. And I know that may be surprising, but it is so.
Thank you very much, Tabitha. Mom's story? I think you're the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to be long. Men, Tabitha, I see on your CV that you did a lot of mobilization and advocates on human rights. You have alluded to that you are a human rights activist. Now, I would like you to quickly tell us here, what if you were to be appointed by Parliament to be a commissioner? What would you do about the issue of early marriages, which here in South Africa we call ukuthwala? And also there's an issue that has never been addressed properly, the human trafficking issue. We don't have a direct legislation that deals with that. And it is happening. What would you do if you would be appointed by Parliament to be a commissioner? Because these are ongoing, and the issue of Impala is, I think, with the law reform at the moment. Yes. But I would like to know what is your opinion on that.
Thanks. As you say, it's under review at the moment. But I think one of the things that could be done, which would be a good early sign, is actually at school level, where we target certain provinces or certain schools within provinces to say attendance must actually be used as an early warning sign by the teachers to say, where is so-and-so? You can't miss school one day, you can't miss school the second day. Attendance must actually now be seen within a broader context than saying, oh, she must be sick or there is something wrong. So where we have your rapid response kind of situation where if there are certain people who do not come to school, there's an alarm that is sent out either to your social workers or to even CGE, and CGE can actually ignite its own machinery inside to say what is happening there. And that is where NGOs come in handy in terms of collaboration with the CGE, so that you don't end up with hearing about it months later, but rather to say. But it will also send a message, a good message, that we are being watched before there's a lot of problems that happen. In that regard. And then thirdly, there is a collaboration that is needed with Home Affairs. Home Affairs is aware of a whole lot of people who have been brought into South Africa or out of South Africa without them doing anything. And I think a proper formal collaboration would help in that regard, in terms of saying, this is what has happened. These are people coming in. I know of people, places where even when you look for a domestic worker, you go there. There are 50, 30 women at any one time. But who can press the alarm bells would be critical. So it's that, and maybe even your street committees and a whole lot of other, a whole machinery of alarming somebody, and then that person responds.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for the response. I'm sure even for the one that you have clarified, because sometimes, you know, people read papers and sometimes we conclude and you don't get an opportunity where you can express yourself and clarify the whole issue. Thank you very much. And do you have any questions?
Yes, I just wanted to know when you were looking at the person starting, also to clarify my current employment arrangement. Because I am a practicing advocate, I work for myself, so I will have the time, because whether I take on a client or not depends on me. So it is a situation I can manage.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much for honoring our invitation.
Thanks.
Have a safe trip. Yeah, I'm sure it's traffic now. It's better than in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank
can
you
I,
very much.
Can
yeah,
I?
You can. You can have that water. Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.